Welcome back to the podcast that makes you faster. In the first half of this episode, we talked about the birth of Swisscide. So if you are here for the first time, just press pause, go back to our profile and listen to the first half because it's pretty cool and interesting too. In this second half, we are talking about the wind tunnel battle, why JP is a bit like Bruce Lee, we are talking about the breakthrough of the brand and the first Swisscide athletes. Sit back, relax and enjoy. How long does it took from scratch to the first wheel?
Oh yeah, like I mean the first batch of wheels we had actually were just rubbish. You know, the first we started with like partial container loads. We literally had to scrap a whole partial container load of wheels because they were unusable. And so we did a lot of learning. Like we thought that the producers in Taiwan where we were producing in the cycling industry, like the Silicon Valley of cycling industry, it's where all of the production takes place. It's around, I don't know, 50-kilometer radius from Taichung, which is in the middle of Taiwan, is kind of like the main hub of cycling, high-performance cycling in the world. Okay. And we made the assumption that they knew what they were doing. You know, oh, they know better than us. They do this all day long. But what we realized is that they don't. They're really good at mass-producing stuff, but they produce it to what you want, and they don't necessarily know the reason behind. And so we kind of left them certain decisions to make, like on, I don't know, material thicknesses or material types or whatever, thinking that, you know, well, they've done it before, we don't need to. And then we started having cracking rims and stuff, and it was like, oh my gosh. Or like, you know, hub geometries and spoke angles and stuff. Then we realized really quickly, like literally within 2 months, that we need to do this ourselves from the first concept to the complete design. And so, yeah, the first Swisscide wheels were literally, we designed our own hubs. We designed, the only thing we didn't design were the spokes, and we brought spokes back then from Sapim.
Okay.
Everything else designed and had manufactured and built to our specification. And that's what we had to learn really quickly. And, you know, cost us a bit of money, but, you know, you learn quickly.
Bit of money, bit of time, but yeah.
bit of soul. a bit of me died in there when I was like, oh my God, what have we done? You know, like you learn to deal with stress quickly, put it that way, yeah.
Where's the name come from? Swisscide.
Yeah, look, that's a really funny story. I don't know if I don't know what people think about it, but so at the time, I'm going to be, you know, full disclosure here, I was a big LEG fan. If people don't know, as LEG, you know, as you know, from the West Side and all of that, and I loved LEG, and of course, you know, Sacha Baron Cohen, who is the LEG character, went on to have some cool other characters and a lot of success in the film world, but so back at the time, LEG was one of my favorite kind of personalities, and he was always like, "I's LEG, and I's from the West Side, you know, West Side Massive. You're going to come over, and we're going to do some stuff together, and all of that." And I was like, LEG is cool, and I want to be on the Swiss side because he's on the West Side, and I'm on the Swiss side, and we're going to go for a ride on the Swiss side." And that was kind of literally where the name kind of started. And also, I knew that what we were doing, like on a more serious note, I knew that what we were doing was really high-tech Swiss precision. And, you know, I'm half Swiss, I'm half Australian, I've worked half my life here in Switzerland, and I really appreciated the Swiss values when it comes to engineering, quality, precision. And it was clear that it had to have Swissness was very clear about what we did and the value that we put into our product. So I wanted to have Swiss in the name, and so hence Swisscide was born.
Ali G's in the house.
Ali G's in the house at the Swisscide.
At the Swisscide. What does the logo stand for?
All right. Yeah. So on our wheels, you'll see we've got, or on our shirts or whatever, you'll see this kind of logo that looks like kind of a bomb.
Yeah. Or some sort of a raindrop or something.
Yeah. And that was really cool. Like, again, as an engineer coming out of, you know, performance engineering, I had no idea about graphic design and sort of brand design and all of that stuff, which is really important if you actually want to do something seriously in the market. And so, you know, we got in contact with a graphic designer, and I remember we did literally, I think, like 100 or 150 logo iterations of anything imaginable.
Oh, yeah.
And this one just came up kind of months in and it was like, bang, that's exactly it. And what it is it's two S's for the Swiss side. That's mm-hmm. one S is reversed, so they're back to back.
Yeah.
But what's really cool is also when we did one of the initial photo shoots or scouting for photo shoots early on, we found like a hairpin corner, which is on the Grimsel Pass in Switzerland. And it's like this hairpin, which is exactly these two S's back to back. And we're like, okay, oh, that looks so cool. And finally, like you said, it looks like a teardrop shape. So all of these things together, that created the logo, which we call our switchback logo.
So you built a startup your own, besides working full-time in the first years and then working for 60%. Do you have actually a receipt for building a startup for everyone who's listening and who's maybe also trying to put a product or something or an idea into the market?
To be honest, now reflecting, it's been over 10 years that we've been here. I actually think that the recipe for a successful startup actually is fairly simple. It's the doing it hard bit. So my recipe is, I'd say, first of all, you've got to pick a market and a product or a space, where there is space for a new product or a new brand. Bicycle wheels was not a great choice, but, I did it anyway.
But you didn't know, so.
But I didn't know, so, who cares, got in there. But the most important thing, though, which was why we had some success, is you've got to have a really clear USP. So, what's your unique selling point? How do you differentiate your products and your brand to the others? Mm-hmm. And then the one thing that I learned really, really quickly was diverse income streams, because, that's going to really help. Don't be afraid to challenge the norms, do things differently. They call that disruption nowadays. But disruption not for the sake of disruption, but, because there's a real reason and a purpose. But I think that the biggest tip, the biggest part of the recipe is just be prepared to work like crazy, more hours than you've ever worked, push your limits for 5 years, earn nothing. I think the other really important thing is be prepared to change your plan. You come with this plan and your plan dies on the first day and you evolve to what the market wants or to what's possible within the reality of the market. You've just got to keep on pushing and you've got to be a chameleon. You've got to keep adapting your business model until it works. And then, if you get these things right and you survive these storms and you adapt when you need to, then, you can have success. And, people ask me, did you have some luck? And honestly, now I can say, I don't really believe in good luck.
Okay.
I believe you make your own luck. In that, you do the hard work, you deliver, you put yourself out there, you really show what you can do. You sow the seeds. I always talk about sowing seeds, and then opportunities come from that. And if you then make the right, let's say, risk reward decisions along the way, you kind of make your own luck.
Being patient and being passionate about something can lead you to great success if you're sticking to what your dreams are. I think it's maybe not the best thing to read too much, to see too much, to get yourself too much into the already existing business, because everything was done before.
Totally. And actually, that's a really important point. And maybe just to give it a little bit of insight about me, I don't read. I'm not a reader. I don't go reading books. I don't read, how to do a startup. I don't read these, how to negotiate 101. I don't read. I do. And I don't read the press a lot. Sure, I get fed some things I need to read from time to time, but I don't really follow the trends. Like, I follow the physics really for the products that we do. And I know what my goal is. It's to design the fastest bicycle wheels, and to learn about the world of cycling and how do we make the wheels make that world faster, and more efficient. And I don't think, I mean, we are doing the learning, we are doing the research. So there's not really a lot out there that that we really need to learn from. But some people might say that's a silly approach, but that's just how I am. So
normally, I think people will think that you as an engineer first read all the articles and the books before starting startup.
To be honest, I'm lucky to have, like, my parents were very successful in international business. My dad ran, you know, big multinational corporations his whole career. So I kind of had good exposure to that and great mentors in that sense. So it's not like I didn't have any support. It's the opposite. I had great support in terms of just double checking, sanity checking decisions and concepts that I had. But no, I didn't go reading books about running a business. I've never done that. Sometimes I wish I should go and do an MBA or something, but I'd learn about, you know, doing finance, which is one of the things I hate. But anyway, I just like to do something. I'm just an engineer. I like to create, I like to innovate. But in terms of the engineering perspective, I mean, I suppose one thing I learned very early on is that in terms of aerodynamics in cycling, there was close to zero knowledge before we kind of hit there. There were some great guys who had great ideas and clearly some inspirational people who did some good stuff in the past, but there wasn't really a structured research and development and kind of a publication of that. So, and one thing I learned is, you know, we transferred all this technology across from Formula One. That was one of our other USPs is, you know, we apply the F1 development methods and tools that we have there to developing cycling equipment. But we had to readapt it all because, you know, our speed range is, say, 20 to 60 kilometers an hour that we're working in. And this is ultra low speed aerodynamics. And none of the aerodynamic principles, well, like to say, the aerodynamic principles that you traditionally learn don't apply one-to-one at these ultra-low speeds. And you've got these, what we call Reynolds number effects, like turbulent laminar flow transition points. This gets a bit nerdy, but like it gets really, really complex and it's right in the speed range that we're at in cycling. So we had a huge amount of learning to do. And I think, I guess, from the stuff I read, the limited stuff I read that people gave me to read about cycling aerodynamics, I realized that most of it was actually either wrong or irrelevant and that we had to do our own learning and go from there. So that's kind of that's Swiss side in a nutshell. It's sort of, it's a learning by doing and a creating new research and new know-how along the way. That's sort of what we do. We spend a lot of time creating value and learning about aerodynamics in this ultra low speed area, right? And at the same time, we were selling wheels and we realized, my God, we can't sell enough wheels to make any money. We can't survive on selling wheels because, you know, especially in the cycling industry, you know, adopting a new brand takes 5 to 10 years, you know. The cyclists, triathletes are sort of relatively early adopters, but in the mainstream cycling industry, you can still be seen as a newbie after 20 years. So, so it was clear that we weren't going to survive from just making and selling wheels. And so like that's where the Swiss side aerodynamics consulting arm was born. Because, you know, we had all this know-how and we thought, okay, well, we need a diversified income stream. So we can be a consultant to other brands. And make some money from that helps us grow the Swiss side brand, but also gives us an income stream to help grow the Swiss side wheel business. So that was a really key part of Swiss side. And as some people will know, you know, we've designed a lot of fantastic cycling products, bike frames for Canyon, helmets for, Rudy Project, Ecoy suits, you know, racing suits for Tour de France teams. We've even done a tire development. So literally everything from head to tire, we have our fingers in when it comes to aero development. So yeah, the consulting arm's a big part of, it's actually more than half of the Swiss side business at the moment.
And it still is.
And still is and will always be because we realize that that's a, you know, the our essence that makes us good is where an aerodynamics research, well, not just aerodynamics, aerodynamics and physics research development company. And then we apply that know-how to building products. At the moment, those products are wheels. In the future, it will be other things as well.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we see that it's huge value to other brands that we help them with their products as well and help them develop their aerodynamic lineup.
Super stoked to dive deep into this in the following podcasts. because we're going to have a lot of conversations about all of the aero things. And I think that because I'm a part-time athlete, I would say myself, but I really don't know much about aerodynamics in specific. So I'm super excited to ask you all the noob questions.
yeah, for sure. We'll do in the coming podcasts. I mean, we'll do, so it doesn't scare people off, we'll do a aerodynamics basics, aerodynamics 101. Why is aerodynamics important? How can you make yourself faster easily? All the way through till sort of intermediate and to advanced, where we can fully geek out and answer people's questions on the most complex aerodynamic topics to do with cycling.
That's super cool. Looking forward to it. Where was the key break for Swisside?
Yeah, I think, again, I mentioned earlier, you make your own luck. And we knew we had designed a wheel that was what we thought was the fastest wheel ever. Mm-hmm. Designed in terms of its ability to make that whole bike and rider system faster. And the wind tunnel we use, which is the GST wind tunnel in just near Friedrichshafen, just happened to be 15 minutes down the road from Eurobike when it used to be there. And so we said, oh, we've got a cool idea. We can't afford, we're too young, too financially poor to be on the Eurobike, and it didn't really make sense for us because we were mainly an online direct brand. But we want to try and impress the media. So we created this thing called the Wind Tunnel Battle, where we would invite the media and we'd say, you can bring, and in the first year it was, bring any wheel you can get your hands on, come and test it in the wind tunnel for free, and we'll show you that we have a faster wheel.
Like Bruce Lee, when he was stepping into the ring and said, like, okay, you can bring any kind of martial arts and I will defeat all of them because I've created my own style.
Exactly. I wish I was like Bruce Lee, but it was like that. We had confidence in the product we developed, and we were like, just put yourself out there. It's like, come and challenge us. And so one of the magazines that came along that picked up on that that offer was Tour Magazine. And Tour Magazine is Germany's biggest print magazine, and it's been a really big influencer in the European cycling market for a long time.
Yeah.
And I was first of all surprised that they wanted to come. They liked this disruptive new player putting themselves out there, saying, you come and objectively test my product. And and as well, the connection to Formula One, I think they found quite exciting, and I think they wanted to see, is it genuine? And so they sent their technical guy, Robert Koonen, who's been there forever, who's a really great guy. He's super objective. He's got the same, approach that we do in terms of the numbers do the talking. Mm-hmm. And he came in and he brought at the time, a Zip 808 Firecrest wheel and tested it up against the Swisside wheel. And let's say we performed extremely well. And that led to them writing, I think it was a 5-page article about this new brand, Swisside.
Okay.
And I mean, I was told afterwards that they had never done that before. And so that was really sent some waves in at least the bicycle wheel market. And people were like, who the hell is this brand, Swisside, and where have they come from? And what's that all about? So it created a lot of interest and awareness. Mm-hmm. And again, it created the first links to other brands that then contacted us and said, well, you've got this know-how. Do you want to share it? Mm-hmm. And the early partners on that respect were Cube, but then as well, very early on, DT Swiss. It was quite funny. The first time DT Swiss contacted us, it was actually because of this magazine. I was shitting myself because I thought they're going to, like, I don't know, have a lawsuit against me because Swisside is too close to DT Swiss and
there's not enough place for the two of us.
There's not enough. Oh yeah, and they wanted to quash us. So I was like, invited to DT Swiss there to have a meeting. And in fact, it was the exact opposite. They were super humble, and it's one thing I've been really impressed by DT Swiss my whole sort of career in the cycling industry, is they're also very similar mentality to us. They were like, look, we produce the best quality wheels in the world. but we've missed the boat when it comes to aerodynamics. You clearly, and they put this article in front of me, we don't know how you did that, but that's amazing. How can we work together? And I really liked that because it was like, you know, they didn't pretend to be experts in aerodynamics, and
yeah.
And they are the experts in mass production of bicycle wheels in the world. And it was sort of a good collaboration, which had a lot of potential and has shown it has delivered a lot of potential. So yeah, it was yeah. really cool. So, you know, that first sort of Tour Mag, that wind tunnel battle that we instigated, the fact that Tour Magazine and Triathlon Magazine and a bunch of influential media partners turned up. We impressed them with our product. They wrote about it and Suicide was born, really.
Wow. Wow. Was it your idea to put up the wind tunnel battle or?
Yeah, it was. I mean, people were like, actually, I remember one of the engineers that you know, from Sauber was like, do you really want to do that? You don't know what they're going to bring. And I was like, I don't care what they're going to bring. I've got confidence that we've got an absolute kick-ass product. I'd say it could well be the fastest wheel ever developed. And if there's a faster one, I want to know about it. And if the media brings it and we learn from it, then brilliant. It helps us design the next one faster. So that's kind of how it all kind of kicked off. So, I mean, I'm always out there to be challenged. You know, nice. I want to develop the fastest products in the world.
Yeah.
And that's my goal. And if someone brings a faster one, I welcome that and I'm happy to see it. And then I'll go out and develop an even faster one. So that's
okay. So that's the wind tunnel battle is an ongoing thing. So it's an ongoing invite to anyone.
I mean, we've done the wind tunnel battle every single year since then, except for last year when Eurobike didn't happen. And last year Eurobike was in Frankfurt, so it didn't make sense anymore. But yeah, we did it for, I think, 5 or 6 years.
Nice.
So it was cool. The other part, maybe just to mention about sort of the key breaks for Swisside, is athletes are really important. And we realized early on that we want to be involved with athletes because one way we can show that our products are faster and as well another place we can put our aerodynamic know-how is making athletes faster. And so if we sponsor athletes, we can help them be faster, not just with our wheels, but also with their whole setups, you know, doing wind tunnel tests and so on. And through having success with athletes, that's going to have reflect a positive light and generate interest and awareness for the Swisside brand.
Yeah.
And so that's what we did with, we were really lucky with the Raylett brothers. They contacted us, I think it was also 2014, probably also read the Tour Magazine article. And I know they'd had a few recommendations. We did a little bit of work for BMC really early on. Mm-hmm. One of the guys there who, because the Raylett brothers were BMC athletes, and they said to me, yeah, they spoke to one of the key guys there and said, you know, are these Swisside guys for real? And they're like, yeah, they're for real. At that time, you know, the Raylett brothers, they were like the fastest triathletes in.
Was it this time when Andy set up the world record in Ironman? Yeah. Ironman distance? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. When Andy and also Michael did the fastest distance on the middle distance, 70.3.
Yeah.
And it was like, my God, these guys are contacting us. This is an amazing opportunity. And that was the relationship that we built with them and the successes that we had, because we really did some really wicked stuff. You know, we ended up designing two bikes for them, literally for Andy Raylett and Michael Raylett with Cube, that led to some, you know, huge results, and really kind of kicked off the flurry of new aero bike designs that came after that. That was really cool, and that was definitely one of the key breaks and key kickstarters for Swisside. And I've said always, you know, to Andy and the Raylets that, you know, they're sponsored for life. So, you know, I'm so grateful to them for their trust in us and also the relationships that we built with them, you know, particularly with Andy and Sven. You know, they're just great guys
The most humble persons on the planet.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. You've never seen anything like it. So doors always open for the Raylets.
Yeah. I got to know Andy and Michael, of course, too, as I was there for a little interview and a shooting for Swisside in the summer. And Andy was so great. He invited me to his house. His whole family was there, the kids, the dogs, everybody, like his brother, both of his brothers. And yeah, he took the whole day off just to take some photos and some shoots. And he was super, super cool. And yeah, I hear that pretty often, that guys are saying like he's the most friendly person on this planet. And of course, in triathlon.
Yeah,
so it's a perfect fit. It's a perfect match for the brand.
Absolutely. And like, I think, you know, because, you know, we really want to be a authentic brand.
Yeah.
And we really want to, you know, we want to bring real performance. We want to, I don't know, the customer really comes first with us. I don't just say that. I mean, I really mean it. We try and offer really good pricing, the best pricing we possibly can. You know, the value for the customer comes beyond the profitability of the company.
Yeah.
I don't want to sell shit. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And Andy is exactly that type of guy. You know, he's like genuine, and I don't know if the guy's, I don't think he's capable of lying. You know, he's so honest and so helpful. And I mean, he's just a model person. So yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We were a fantastic fit and are remain a great fit. So, yeah.
Totally cool. Like I said, it's a perfect fit because, yeah, when I saw Andy for the first time, he opened all of the doors of his life for me. And, it's like the same with the wind tunnel battle approach. It's like you open all the doors to see backstage what's happening at Swisside, and you can always come and check if this is real.
Absolutely. You know what we've got to do? We'll make sure we get Andy, at least Andy, to come in to this podcast in one of the future, because we're going to do an episode with athletes.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll make sure we get in Andy, if he agrees to it, to hear his perspective on the world of triathlon and how we came together and what's important for him.
Looking into the future of this podcast, it's all about behind the scenes of the Swisside business. You will learn more about cycling tech, athlete and team news, the cycling industries and current affairs. And yeah, we will, of course, do live podcasts at specific events like maybe Challenge Roth. Thank you very much for your time, for all of the insights that are very specific and super interesting for me and for all the listeners too. And yeah, I think we will do this on a monthly basis first. So always expect our podcast to be released in the beginning of a new month. And JP, do you have anything to add?
Nothing at all. Thank you so much. And thank you for everyone for listening. I hope we can, give you some nice Swisside insight into what we do and what the industry really looks like behind the scenes.
Nice. Thank you very much. And if you want to become a Swisssider, just check out the website or our social media channels, and we will always be there for you.